This is Bad Movies We Love, part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special edition of Bad Movies We Love. I am your host, Nick Scheist.
The master of the stupid stuff!
That's right, and I've got a lot of stupid stuff for you, as this is a special episode to celebrate the best bad movies we love of 2024. Now, last year when I did this, it was just me talking at you, throwing some random stuff out there, but there's more form and function this year, as I was joined by my wife, Kristen, who came over from This Week at the Movies to help me put together our sort of individual lists of our favorite bunch of bad movies we love from 2024. Now, keep in mind, these are not movies we covered here on Bad Movies We Love during 2024. These are the best bad movies that were released to the public during the calendar year of 2024. So strap in, buckle up, grab a helmet, grab a drink, whatever you gotta do, because we're about to get into the nitty-gritty. This is Bad Movies We Love, Best of 2024. Okay, and away we go.
All right.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to Bad Movies We Love.
Thanks.
It's been a while.
It has.
What did we do? Jingle All the Way? That's the one that I got shit for.
Who gave you shit for that?
Some random person that didn't like me calling Howard a mattress salesman. That guy.
That's right. Yes.
Mattress salesman. It says it in all of the descriptions. So,
and really, if you're going to nitpick anything, why is that the thing you're nitpicking?
He took it personally. He listened to the show and was like, wait a second. This guy's working hard for his family. He's not a negligent father.
We'll leave that one alone.
Yeah. Well, he's being a negligent father. That's the whole like premise of the movie.
Yeah.
Not like negligent in the sense that like his family's starving or
you absent.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's sort of just ignoring them in the name of selling mattresses. So, Well, anyway, we're here today for the bad movies we love best of 2024. I did this for the first time last year, and it was a lot of fun because we're really not looking at the worst movies of the year. This is not what we're doing here. This isn't like a lot of people that feel the need to put out like movies I hated the most or worst movies of the year kind of thing. That's not this. This is sort of our favorite movies that are ranked in the bottom of the barrel numbers wise. So probably movies that made other people's worst movies of the year list, but we're here to look through those and to pick the ones that we like and think are worth seeing. And we both came up with 10. That was the parameters I put on. And I said, look at this list of everything that qualifies and give me 10 total movies from this list that you enjoyed. And so we're going to trade a little bit, but thank you for agreeing to do this.
Of course.
Do you have your list up in front of you?
I do.
Does it make sense for me to go through all of the qualifying movies before we start giving some out?
No.
No?
I don't think so I think we should do that at the end after comparing the two lists.
Okay. That works.
Winging it.
Yeah. Okay. But for listeners, this is the bad movies we love patented aggregate scoring machine that grabs a bunch of other scores, brings them together here. And so this is everything that was that was actually below 60 out of 100
aggregating all of the metrics. So that's what we're dealing with. That's typically what I look for movies that I'm going to talk about on this show. It's the same parameters that I use for the Bad Movies Future show, and how I allow myself to decide what does and doesn't qualify for the show. I get a little loose, and I'm like, stuff that's in like the 60 to 65 range, if the guest really wants to do it, I'll allow it. But then I feel like we're getting into territory that's just closer to it just being an accepted as a good movie. So we need stuff that's sort of in the lower territories. But I will give you the honors, and you can start us off, and this will be this is number 10. We're both going to start at 10 and work our way up to 1, and we'll see how much crossover there is. And if there is crossover, we'll knock it off of the other person's list.
So rank from the bottom, the one like I liked the least from the bottom up?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, least favorite to most favorite. And then if your title is on my list, we'll cross it off my list, and I'll say where it's located on that list. Because I'm not really into rankings, but we just kind of like did this loosely to give it format.
Yeah, I mean, I can't rank it one by one. There's like, I want 4 at the top and then the rest. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'll do my best.
I know. I like a tiered system myself where it's like, this is the top tier and then here's the middle and the bottom.
Yeah. But I would say bottom is pretty easy for me. It would be Never Let Go.
Okay, this is the Halle Berry horror movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was enjoyable. Like, I had a good time with it. She's good in it, obviously. We talked about this when we did the This Week at the Movies episode where we had gone and seen it. So we've already shared our thoughts more or less completely on it. But I think it's definitely worth seeing if you're a fan of horror films. It does some very effective horror stuff. The kids are both good. Like, the performances are all good. Whether or not it sticks the landing on what you want out of the movie, or maybe where the movie's potential is, that's a different question. But I feel like, at least from the horror community, I didn't see a lot of backlash against this, but I didn't see a lot of like favoritism for it either.
Yeah, I feel like other than us talking about it when we saw it, I didn't hear anyone else talk about it. And they're all great. I don't dislike the movie, so this is hard to.
That's fair, but that's
conceptualize. But I don't. Yeah, it just didn't stick with me like one that's not on the list. But like every time we have these kind of conversations, like Strange Darling is at the very top of my like front of my mind for a lot of things. And if you hadn't had this on a list, I probably would have forgotten about it. Not because it was bad or anything, but.
Yeah, I could see that. I feel like, unfortunately, it sort of falls into the forgettable range.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen 170 movies this year, so if I had to name them all, it might be one that I forget to mention when recounting all of them myself. But because it's Halle Berry.
Yeah, I mean, she's solid, of course.
I'm going to give it grace. That one did not make my list, so there's no crossover there. So I'm going to go straight to my number 10, which is Sasquatch Sunset.
I don't think I saw that one.
No, you didn't see that one?
Well, it's not on my list.
That's true. You didn't come with me. Before I forget, the actual total aggregate score for Never Let Go is 54.6. So on the higher end of the spectrum, trending towards maybe not being on this list. But yes, for me, the number 10 slot goes to Sasquatch Sunset, which has a aggregate score of 55.8. The Bad Movies We Love total score of just under 56. It's weird. It's gross.
Is it horror?
No, like I didn't know what to expect from it. I guess it's like maybe sci-fi is the closest, because it's like a family of Sasquatch that are just like living out in the wilderness and doing Sasquatch things, and there's no dialogue, and you don't really know like what era it is or anything for a long time, and there's like death, and so it's like it's the interesting like family drama of these very sort of like gross creatures.
I don't even remember that one coming out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. if nothing else. But there are some like really, really funny moments in it. And just like they all like look funny on screen. So it's got a good cast, though. I think it's what, Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg's in it, too.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So what's your number 9?
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I would probably say Here.
Here, the, what is it, Reiner? No, Zemeckis. Hanks. Robert Zemeckis. Yeah, Tom Hanks, Robin Wright Penn. Yeah, very, very uniquely styled film. Felt kind of like maybe an art installation. So I appreciate the ambition in it. That one's got a 52 Bad Movies We Love total score. I could see why people might not like it, especially if you're used to just like how movies traditionally operate. Because having the single fixed camera and just like sort of time-lapse editing throughout the whole thing, and obviously you can't do all of that with one set, so I'm sure there's a lot of digital stuff going on. The de-aging stuff, I'm sure, was like unsettling for a lot of people. But I think sort of like at the core of the story is the relationship between Robin and Tom Hanks. And it sort of looks at that relationship through an interesting lens where, you know, that story being told, I don't know, maybe a decade or so ago, would not have maybe adequately focused on her character and why I feel like she's justified in sort of her character trajectory arc. And it gives oxygen to that, which, you know, when Tom Hanks was a star, I don't know that there would be that much breathing room for that story. It's not that he's not a star now, but this movie, I think, handled it pretty adeptly.
Yeah. I mean, I still liked it. It was a little slow, but I don't have anything negative to say in regards to not seeing it.
Okay. That's fair. That one did not make my list either, so we're going to go to my number 9, and that is Asphalt City, which stars Sean Penn. So from Robin Wright to Sean Penn, oddly enough, and Ty Sheridan. And it's about the EMS ambulance techs, and Ty Sheridan is like moving into, I think they're in like Harlem or in Hell's Kitchen or something, and he's like stepping up from being what are they called, you know, paramedic. Thank
paramedics
you. Yeah, sorry, long day. So he's stepping up from being a paramedic in a smaller environment to doing it in New York, and Sean Penn is like a career guy in New York. And so you can see sort of like how his lifestyle has shaped him and how he's struggling with it. And I think what the movie does really well is it sort of gave me not quite like a panic attack, but it's trying to sort of mimic the struggle and the panic that Sheridan's character is going through as a young man, like beginning to experience this. And it felt very much like capturing this sense of sort of like millennial dread that, like, no matter what you do, like, it's just never enough. Like, just in the environment, like, no matter how well you do your thing, like, even if you save one person, it's just like other people are dying around you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, just like, it's overwhelming. And so he deals with that in a very, I think, like, tactile way. And yeah, the way that, like, sort of you hear like his heart beating and stuff, it's well done. I could see, you know, why it ended up in this range, and it does have sort of an overall low score of, was that 53.8? So it's not too bad, but I think it just was sort of like an underseen, maybe people think it like hit the nail too on the head. But yeah, good performances, like interesting subject matter, very sort of like graphic at times too, so disturbing in that way. But yeah, that one got to me.
Yeah.
All right, what's your number 8?
It's gonna get tough, but I'm gonna go with Joker 2.
Oh, nice. Okay. Joker 2, that's one of the lowest scores on the board.
That's crazy.
Yeah, with 43.4. That's pretty tough, but I also have Joker on my list at number 5.
Wait, this was 7? No,
this
was
8, yeah.
Okay.
So because, you know, I just watched it again. I talked to Newman on Bad Movie Futures about Joker 2, and we had a very, like, long, detailed, interesting conversation about the movie's strengths and its identity and it being the other side of the pendulum from the first Joker movie and sort of how Todd Phillips plays with expectations and with anticipation and sort of like with what the audience wants. And it's more interesting than it's getting credit for. But I see that if you really liked what Joker 1 did, this movie doesn't do like any of that stuff. And that's the point. But I could see it pissing people off.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to swing it over to my number 8 because I just lost my number 5 pick. My number 8 pick is Rumors, which I think it is a French film, but it is sort of in the vein of Quentin Dupieux, who I really enjoy as a just absurdist filmmaker. It's actually not French, but the countries of origin are Canada, Germany, Hungary, and the US. But it feels like it was made by this particular French filmmaker. And it's just like completely ridiculous. The leaders of 7 wealthy democracies get lost in the woods while drafting a statement on global crisis. And it's really just like poking fun at the kind of red tape and bullshit that goes along with being like a high-level politician, and it really has an excellent cast with Kate Blanchett and Denis Menashe and Charles Dance, Takahiro Hira. Alicia Vikander shows up in the movie at one point. There's a giant brain in the wilderness. So, I mean, it's taking its shots at sort of all of these Western cultures that are getting together, not just Western. I mean, Japan is included in the G7 conversation there as well, but it is definitely tongue in cheek, and it's listed as dark comedy, political drama, satire, zombie horror, comedy, drama, horror. So I don't know if it is a horror movie at all, but it is definitely maybe a satire on a take. It's like, it's aware that that is sort of like the genre that it's playing with is like zombie horror, but it doesn't actually like get that zombified, I guess.
Zombified?
Yeah. You saw this with me, but I wouldn't be surprised if it just in one ear and right out the other. In one eye hole and out the back of the brainstem.
I have no recollection of seeing this.
That's fair. Okay. directed by Evan Johnson, Galen Johnson, and Guy Madden. That one clocks in with a score of 54.8. So it's in there. All right. So what's your number 7?
I'm going to go let's go with Red One.
Ooh. All right. Red One. That is my number 4. So here we are again. Yeah.
All right.
All right, Red One. All of the stuff that I heard about Red One trashed it. Critics were just trashing the hell out of it. And look, I understand why. It is very much a sort of capitalistic Christmas movie that shoves Dwayne Johnson into this role, shoves Chris Evans into this role. But I love J.K. Simmons. So I was like, I'll give it some grace there. We get some fun Krampus and some fun, what is it, the Winter Witch stuff. So you get like some interesting like Christmas mythology lore, which I wasn't really expecting at all. I was thinking maybe like more mercenaries kidnap Santa Claus, but I liked that it was more magical, you know. And it's just like it's a fun romp through that mystery land. And I feel like this is probably one of the more dialed in uses of Dwayne as this kind of character, where he's sort of just meant to be like imposing and menacing when it counts. And he's just sort of very rock-like. Very stoic in this. And because it's like, you know, it's a buddy comedy with him and Chris Evans, basically. So Chris Evans gets to be the, you know, the bad dad who's cool and wears sunglasses and his beard is like shaped up way too nicely for a guy who's like kind of disheveled. And then J.K. Simmons just gets to be like Santa, you know, like an older, wiser, less jolly Santa, like a very business-like Santa. And it all comes down to this like conversation of like the Christmas spirit and like what it means to be generous and care about other people. And so like I feel like it's coming from a fairly good place. And even though it clocks in with a Bad Movies We Love total score of 52.8, if you look at the scores, it's got a 6.4 on IMDb, a 34 Metascore, a 30 Tomato Meter, and a 46 on Letterboxd, but it has a 90 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I remember hearing a lot of negative about this, and we waited a while to watch it, too. It was streaming by the time we watched it, but I was pleasantly surprised by how fun it was, and maybe it was just because there was so much hate towards it, but, I mean, it had its flaws or whatever, you know, most critics are going to say was wrong with this movie. But for the most part,
it was fun.
It was great.
And we, you know, we watched it like right around Christmas, too. So it was like we were in the Christmas spirit. And I think that goes a long way. So there you go. Look at that. I put that way up on my list. I had way more fun with it than I thought. Okay, so was that your number 7?
I think so.
Okay, so what's your number 6?
We're doing all mine in a row.
Oh, wait, no. Okay, you got a 7. It's my turn for 7, then.
Yeah.
Megalopolis. I should have put it higher.
Did I see it?
Yeah, you saw it with me. Again, another one where you were just like, what?
I may have slept.
Yeah,
this
you looked over at me a couple times like, why did you make me watch this movie? And this one's got a Bad Movies We Love total score of 45.8. Definitely low on the board. Is this the... No, Joker was the lowest one other than this. But, you know, it is a gaudy mess where Adam Driver's performance is, like, very weird.
Oh, right.
But, again, this is made by the guy who made The Godfather, you know? And he's 85, 86 years old. He's making a movie at the end of his life that I feel is sort of like him speaking on like the nature of the film industry, because you have this character who I feel like is like an avatar for him that's obsessed with time and like mortality, like living on forever. He's obsessed with legacies, obsessed with like stopping time. He can actually stop time in the movie. And so for a guy who's 80 something, who's made maybe, you know, arguably the greatest American movie of all time and is revered in that high esteem, to make something that is like as gaudy and ridiculous as this, sort of like, I feel like it's a commentary on the film business right now, like maybe the way he looks at it. But that being said, we get a lot of like crazy zany performances out of it. We get some really good visuals in it as well. Adam Driver is clearly having fun, but to me, it seems like Francis Ford Coppola's version of Idiocracy. Like, if you told me that the guy that made Beavis and Butthead made Megalopolis, I'd be like, yeah, of course. Lines up perfectly. But I think that's what makes it interesting, is that he's sort of doing a Mike Judge take for this movie. And it is. It's all, like, very, like, strange to look at visually as well. It's, like, very shiny CGI gold through a lot of it.
It was overstimulating.
A little bit, yeah. And I haven't watched it since then, but it feels like a movie that I kind of need to own. And I found somebody to talk about it on Bad Movie Future, so we're going to have a good one.
All right,
so we're kicking it back to you for your number 6.
I'm going to go with Slingshot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I feel like, I mean, I like sci-fi movies, not to your level, of course, and I felt like I didn't have expectations, and I don't, like, I just like sci-fi movies for what they are, so I don't typically pick up on like holes in storylines or things, you know, I think we had talked about that during the time. Not, you know, huge in supporting Casey Affleck necessarily, but overall as a film itself, I was definitely not edge of my seat, but I felt like on edge in a sense of trying to figure it out. And by also, I still don't know if I would have completely figured it out if we hadn't talked about it after the fact.
Yeah, because we did sort of have not necessarily differing opinions on the ending, but sort of like how the ending gets interpreted changes what the film is. And that's like the second time that's happened in a movie this year where it's like, if the ending is this, then that's different than this. And those are saying different things, right?
Right.
And I like movies about isolation in space, especially, and how that like drives you crazy. And so like in this story where it's like this super long journey and you've got these three characters that are like maybe different degrees of losing their minds, it's interesting. And it's like, it looks good and stuff too. So as far as like a sci-fi sort of flick like that, it's not bad. It didn't make my list, but I realized I made a mistake and doubled because Rumors was my number 8, but I saw it also at 6. So I had to pivot there. And while Slingshot is holding a 54-2, I'm going to go with a different sci-fi thriller as a pinch hitter here and go with ISS, which got a 51.6. And that is, I don't know if you saw that with me.
I don't think I did. Well, I don't know. I didn't. You would know better than I would.
Yeah, it might have been at a time. Let me see. What date was that? I saw it. Oh, I saw it in January. So you definitely
didn't.
Yeah, you were not with me at that point. You were with me, just not didn't go to the movies with me. It's like Russia and America are both working on the ISS, and then like a nuclear war happens and they're now like they have to try to wrestle control of the space station away from each other. And they're sort of paranoid and going crazy, too. But it's a little bit more dialed into like a real world situation than Slingshot. And for that, I really wanted to love it more than I did, but I still had a fairly good time with it. All right, and that brings us to your number 5.
It's going to get really hard ranking from here on out.
That's fine.
But I'm going to go with Venom 3.
Okay. I don't think that's a bad choice.
I don't care what anyone says. I love Tom Hardy in this role, and I will see every Venom movie made and think it's great because he's great.
Well, that was the last one, I think.
Oh.
Probably not, but we might see him again in a different iteration, but I think that's the last of the Venom movies. But it's pulling a 54.4, so a little bit higher on the scale than some of the other ones. I think it was better than Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage. It was not as good as Venom the original, but yes, Tom Hardy and him just talking to the symbiote, you know, I could just watch that movie.
Yeah.
I don't need the action. I don't need the villains.
Exactly.
I could just have him grappling with like the identity issues that they have going on.
Yeah.
And excuse me, I think for the most part, this movie actually like pays some respect to the fact that like these two characters have bonded over this time and that the audience is there to see that these two characters have bonded and is trying to do justice to the people that supported it for that reason.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I don't care about villains. I don't care about the rescue story or the hero complex that needs to come out of like winning in the end. I just want Tom Hardy and the suit.
Eddie. Okay. I flip-flopped. I was like, ooh, Venom, I might put that on my list. And I didn't ultimately put it on my list because it would have ranked somewhere a little bit lower. But I'm glad that you did. But that also means that I have to jump all the way to my number 3. So that means give me your... That was 5 for you, so give me 4. And then I'll go 3 and you can go 3.
Why? Because you also had Venom?
Well, because we crossed off Joker and Red One, oh, which were higher up on my list. I see.
Okay, so we're going number four.
You're
for
number
me.
Four, yeah.
I'm going to say Mean Girls.
Okay. Yeah. It's good. Like, I don't know why people... I didn't even expect to see it on the list, and it's actually near, like, the cusp of getting out of there. It's right about to leave orbit at a 58.8.
I mean, I understand to a certain point because people were surprised by it being a musical, but, like, yeah. I felt like most of the trailers were pretty obvious. And Mean Girls was so beloved and is a cult classic still to this day, so I don't understand why there was so much hate. We saw Mean Girls the musical, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was
so
good.
Maybe this was more palatable, but again... I felt like it was an obvious musical, not the very first trailer, but the more trailers that came out closer to the release, I thought it was pretty obvious it was a musical and I loved it.
Yeah. You're a fan of musicals, so that definitely helps.
But yeah, I love Mean Girls.
I like the original Mean Girls. I like the stage musical. So I like the movie. I get that, like, maybe if you're like, this doesn't need to be remade at all, then you're just going to, like, already be like, no, this is a non-starter for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that because did it need to be remade and into a musical? No, probably not. But with the new cast and Tina Fey kind of leading it, it felt more natural to me for this as a remake versus some of the other things we've seen that are just carbon copies, essentially. But I don't know. I loved it.
Yeah, it was good. And it's right there on, like I said, approaching... the exit point for qualification. So it's on the higher end. Definitely, if you're even moderately curious, just check it out. But let's see. So
did you say I have to do my number three too, or no?
Yeah, you got to do your number three because I don't got a number four or five. You took them already.
Okay.
Which is fine. But
so number three is going to be Trap.
Ooh, good. Because that's my number three also.
Wow.
Look at that.
What does that mean again?
High five.
Woo. Nope, that didn't work. Okay.
Added the sound effects in there. Don't worry about it. Trap was high up on my list because it felt like this was sort of just a tough spot for Shyamalan in the sense that people want him to be a certain type of filmmaker. People are just like, go back and like do The Sixth Sense again. And I like that he doesn't do that. I love that he is very loyal to Philadelphia and is like, I'm going to make movies in Philly about Philly. And I like that this was like a sort of satirical thriller and not a horror movie. Like there's a couple things that are like horror. I mean, like, yeah, he's a serial killer and stuff, but I mean, Josh Hartnett is just so good in this movie.
He is phenomenal. And even though it's like, yeah, he's a serial killer, he's still Josh Hartnett. When have we ever gotten the chance to see him be a serial killer and not just a heartthrob?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy for him because it was a good showcase for him being sort of on the other side of things. And I was like, there are certain scenes in the movie where it's like, I don't know if it was like the camera, like maybe changing its focal length a little bit, but some of the way that like his... sort of like facial tics played into the character, it kind of looked like there was like something crawling underneath his skin, underneath the skin of his face. And so it made him very compelling to watch. And the rest of it is like, whatever. I'm just sort of on board for Josh Hartnett, like doing his thing in this movie. And that's kind of all I really needed out of it. I loved it when it was sort of a single environment story just taking place inside the concert venue. When it leaves and it goes to like the neighborhood and stuff, I felt like it was so good at being like the trapped in the arena idea.
Yeah.
That when it left, I was like, okay, it's not quite the same once it gets out of there. But it's a weird thing in that like his character is obviously the bad guy, but you're like kind of cheering for him to get away with it too, because he's kind of charismatic and like, at the end of the day, he's trying to be a good dad, so I was like, what did I learn from this movie? It's like, oh, that you can be a serial killer and a good dad. Don't quote me on that.
Spoken like all true.
Don't quote me. Okay.
Psychopaths. Yeah, and I think, like, I understand when we talked about it at the time, too. Like, it lost maybe not momentum, but something leaving the arena. But I also felt like, in hindsight, that was fitting because it would have been too easy if they just caught him at the arena. Like, they planned, they had to kind of take it out, yeah, I feel I like. But, yeah, still a fun one. But I'm glad. I hope Josh Hartnett's got a more of a comeback after this.
Yeah, he's got another project where he's sort of, I think he's like bleach blonde and tattooed, and he's also like a bad guy maybe in that. I don't know. I've seen some still photos. I don't remember the name of the movie, but he's got something else in the works, so I'll be interested to see that too. Okay, do you want to do your number two first, or you want to kick it to me now since I haven't had a a pick in a while?
You can go because I'm kind of struggling with my one and two, putting them in an order.
Okay, well, my number two then is going to be Night Bitch.
I have that one too.
As number two?
Well, I mean, I do. Yeah.
All right. I mean, I really like Night Bitch.
I did too. I feel like I appreciated it more not knowing going into it the bigger arching theme that was going to come out of it. I mean, I love Amy Adams, so I wasn't really doubting that. But yeah, I did. I love Night Bitch, and I think it was underrated and not talked about nearly enough.
Yeah, and I mean, not super surprising because it's like, oh, it's a story about motherhood. Right. Like, you know.
Nobody wants to talk about women and motherhood.
Yeah, and I mean, there's definitely like a certain demographic of moviegoer that is just like, if you even told them that was what the movie was about, it'd just be like, no, not seeing that. So.
Because our country loves women.
Mariel Heller is a very good director that I'm always interested in what she's doing. And of course, Amy Adams is great. Scoot McNairy is good in this movie, too.
Yeah.
And I like that it sort of it tackles motherhood in sort of like a gloves off approach where it's showcasing like pretty much like all the bad things and all the resentment and stuff that goes along with it, and the complications of that. And then also all the like wonderful things that come out of it, but how that complicates relationships with your child, with your spouse, with everybody around you, with your job. Like, you know, so I feel like it's actually really well articulated, but maybe people were just like, well, I thought she was going to be like I thought this was a werewolf movie, you know? And then I get some like lecture on motherhood.
Yeah, it's rough for some.
Yeah, but really good. I'm glad that we both had it. I figured we would both have it on the board somewhere. I knew Trap we would both have too. And then I figured there would be some flex. And I think definitely we're not going to have the same number one because you didn't see the one that I picked as number one. So I know that for sure. No, it's not cheating. I got to make sure that I have its name in my mouth so that people can know the truth. You want the honors or you want me to go first?
I can go first.
All right. What's your number one?
Don't Move.
Oh, okay. Netflix, serial killer, thriller, lady gets paralyzed in the woods and chased down.
I think it's because it's one of my biggest fears.
Really?
Not getting chased, not the serial killer. Well, yes, the serial killer chased down part two. I watch a lot of true crime. But being paralyzed but mentally aware.
Really?
Like trapped in your own body being trapped in your own body is one of my biggest fears.
We're married. You've never told me this.
Yeah, because it's not something we don't sit and talk about, like, what are your biggest fears, Maybe we should. I think it's similar to drowning, which is weird, I know, because I love the water. but it's the, like, it's the struggle part, I feel like.
It's the helplessness.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're like so close to being able to like do something, but you can't. And then you just have to like sit there in the fact that you can't.
We have talked about this actually a long time ago because I've always said like, pull the plug.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a vegetable and aware of it.
Well, the vegetable is not aware.
Sometimes.
Thus the vegetable.
Sometimes. But yeah, just like. The being, you know what it is? I can't remember. Was it the movie called Awake?
Yeah.
With the anesthesia.
Is that Hayden Christensen?
I can't
I think
remember.
So. He's like getting operated on, but he feels everything.
He feels everything, but pretty he sure can't talk or move. Yeah. It was pretty much that pushed that fear over the edge.
I mean, that's a pretty scary situation. I mean, can you imagine like how much pain you'd be in, like getting vivisected? Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, no thanks. Yeah. So I think don't move. While it was a little predictable, of course, I feel like I was more anxious and like internally panicked watching this because of that feeling. And the actress did a fantastic job because she couldn't really do much other than make facial expressions, really.
And even barely.
I still felt like, I don't know, like her fear and panic, even though she could barely do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Kelsey Esbiel, I think. I don't know. Can't tell if that's two L's from here, but. And then Finn, of course, Finn Wittrock.
Like, always a psycho.
Yeah, he looks like he's got Patrick Bateman face.
He does. I'm pretty sure he was a serial killer on an episode of Criminal Minds.
And then he was a bad guy, I think, also in that show Ratchet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was
that's
a psycho in that, too. He's got the look. All right.
He does.
Like, I hope he's a genuinely nice man and everything. And I hate to say this, but yeah, he's got the look of like the very piercing sort of empty stare, but is also a good looking man and sort of, you know, operates on that frequency very well. Maybe that's just like his niche, I should say. And it is what it is, but.
Possibly. I mean, I still thought, I mean, especially because it was a Netflix movie, right? Did it have any theatrical release?
I can't remember. No, I think it was a straight to Netflix release, which is fine. It's a great like sort of Netflix film. You sit on your couch, you know what you're getting. It's easy breezy.
Yeah.
90 minutes and you're done.
Yeah. But yes, that is one of my biggest fears. Not necessarily it being imposed on me by a serial killer, although we should throw that in the mix.
Gotcha. Well, that one has a score of 54.4. And so for my number one, I'm going in the opposite direction of an easy breezy 90-minute Netflix original. And we're going to the frontier for Horizon Chapter 1.
That was Netflix?
No, we're going the opposite direction. Netflix. No couch watching. This is nothing but Kevin Costner being an absolute maniac in the frontier. And that one is also borderline. It's at 59.4, so it might have even crawled out of the scoring window. You know, I started putting these scores in a while ago, so it's possible that it's out there. The more people that see it, I think most of the people that I talked to appreciated what it was doing. There's some people that like really hated it, too slow, this, that. And I'm like, yeah, of course it is, because it's part one of four. So I'm not really upset with it being slow. And at the end of the 3.5 hours or whatever, as soon as the movie was over, I was like, I'm ready for part two right now. If you just push play, I would sit here for another 3 hours.
That's crazy.
Because A, I love Westerns. And B, you're just really like, the first movie is just like sort of putting the pawns into place. It's like there a lot of shit is going to happen, but first you have to position the pieces in order to get there. And so that's kind of what that movie is. It's just like scene setting, like getting you familiar with the characters, letting you know like sort of what is going to happen in the second one. So I bet chapter two is a lot more like action packed and a lot more direct and probably not as slow, because this kind of felt like a TV show. And, you know, he had been working on Yellowstone for a long time, so I'm sure that sort of like came with it and he understood the long game type of approach. And I really hope that 3 and 4 get to get made. I hope that 2 gets distribution, because it's going to be a struggle. But for a filmmaker to be like, this is my vision and I'm not compromising it and I will pay for this myself if I have to, and like just work hard to make sure that the movie that he wants to have out is getting out. I respect the hell out of that. And even if the movie sucked, I still would have gone and seen it just for that reason. So, you know, props to Costner for getting it done. Hope we get to see the other one. But we've got that's the end of our list. But there's a handful of movies that are in the mid-range scoring from 60 to 65 that I'm just going to shout out real quick. Arcadian, which is a Nick Cage horror flick. Wildcat, which is Ethan Hawke directing Maya. We've got Immaculate on there, the Sydney Sweeney religious horror film. Boy Kills World, Bill Skarsgård, sci-fi, future, violent, beat 'em up. Skincare, right there at a 60.6, which was fun. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which is a kind of a fun, rompy kaiju movie. It's not like my preferred flavor of Godzilla, but, you know, I like the goofy stuff, too. And it's enjoyable. Firebrand, which is the one with Alicia Vikander and Jude Law. The set in like the 1700s, 1800s. We saw it with Amara.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I love that sort of like fat, slimy, gross Jude Law.
I don't.
I just like getting to see him do that because he's always been.
Give me the holiday Jude
he's
Law.
He's always been the sexy boy. So I want to see big, fat, infected, fucking leg Jude Law.
No, so gross.
What else we got? We got Self-Reliance, which is a fun kind of quirky comedy from the beginning of the year. Look at right here at the 61.8 mark. That's Emilia Perez. Obviously the talk of the town for a number of reasons. None of them seem to be good. But we'll see what happens at the Oscars. 6888 is in there. Man in the White Van, which is another good, like, sort of Netflix-style movie, even though we saw it in theaters. Lisa Frankenstein, cute, like that movie. It Ends With Us. Kinds of Kindness is really kind of a sleeper. I think it's better by a good margin than it's getting represented here, but it is weird. And it is character-wise, like, even maybe weirder than Poor Things.
Yeah.
Which is why people are sort of turned off, but Cuckoo, Out of Darkness is another horror movie that was sort of like a couple years in development before getting a release at the beginning of last year. And I really like that movie. Like, just its horror fundamentals, environmental horror, Dogman, another good one, Book of Clarence, Stop Motion closes us out at 64.6, but good stuff in there. Should I go through the whole bottom list, or do I even not need to do that? We already gave a bunch of movies, and there's some extras that I just mentioned.
No, I don't think so, because if we're just focusing on the bad movies, then those are good ones, aren't they?
Those are ones that are, like, right outside of the scoring window. Those are in, like, the 60 to 65 range on the chart. So I'm just saying, like, even that low on the board, they're still good stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's fine.
All right. Well, then we're done.
Oh. I mean, if you want to, then go for it.
All right. I'm going to quickly go in reverse order of lowest to highest of everything that qualified to be on our top 10 list. Everything that fell below 60 on the aggregate machine. So that's Pool Man, Lumina, Madam Web, Afraid, The Strangers Chapter 1, A Sacrifice, Imaginary, Tarot, The Crow, Joker 2, Kraven the Hunter, who doesn't hunt, Megalopolis, The Watchers, The Fabulous Four, Werewolves, Argyle, Kitty the Killer, ISS, Here, Red One, Driveaway Dolls, Asphalt City, Slingshot, Don't Move, Venom 3, Never Let Go, Rumors, Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse movie.
Oh, yeah.
Sasquatch Sunset, Night Bitch, City of Dreams, Trap, Greatest Hits, Close to You, Mean Girls, Sting, Horizon Chapter 1, Azrael, and Bob Marley, One Love.
I gotta watch that one still. I never watched it.
There's a ton of watchable stuff in there. Ton of watchable, enjoyable stuff in there. And that's what it is.
It's all that matters.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll come back and do this again next year. And if you're listening to this, this is our sort of secret bonus episode this week that'll be out Friday at the end of January to close out the month with some recommendations and some lists. And we're going to have the bonus episodes, the members-only exclusives coming out over the weekend as well. And there's going to be some previews out too, so you can check that stuff out. Decide whether or not you want to become a card-carrying member of the Resistance or not. I'd recommend it because there's going to be some fun stuff. We've got Bad Movie Futures where we get to talk about new movies that are bad. You know, we just saw one tonight that I feel like I'm going to be talking about on the show in Flight Risk.
Yeah, but I don't know who's going to love it.
You don't have to love it.
Oh, this, the Futures. The
yes,
Futures.
This is
right,
just
right, right.
A movie that you have to sort of speculate about whether or not it's going to be more or less appreciated as time goes on.
Less appreciated, for sure.
Probably. I think maybe it will find appraisal as a comedy. Once people like turn the corner and they're like, this is a comedy, then it's like, all right, maybe just laugh at it the whole time and you'll have a good time.
It's funny because I was talking to someone about this movie today and they were like, oh, I heard it wasn't good. And I was like, yeah, but how bad could it be? It's like a thriller on a plane with Mark Wahlberg and it was really bad.
Yeah. But yeah, we're doing that. We've got also Bimon Sci-Fi Con, twice monthly sci-fi exclusive discussion. And then you're going to be joining me for the Rom-Com-a-thon.
Yes. I can't wait to make you watch all the rom-coms.
Exactly. So
we're going to do some repeat ones too.
Okay.
I feel like in your wiser, older age, you got to give them another chance.
Okay. That's fine. You get to dictate what movies are part of that discussion.
All right.
And so, yeah, there's going to be paid exclusives. You'll have the opportunity to be part of the Discord chat. You'll be automatically entered into upcoming giveaways in the future. Fun, fun stuff. So it's only $5 a month.
That's such a bargain.
It is. I spend more than that on soda just today.
That's right.
That's right.
And most
the
people.
Look you just gave me while saying that. Yes, delicious. Diet Coke, sponsor me.
Most spend more than that on coffee.
Yeah, of course.
It's good. I mean, I've cut back on my coffee spending.
You have. Well done.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
That'll wrap us up.
Sounds good.
Cool. Take care, everybody.
Have a good night.
Have a good night. Thank you to everyone who took the time to listen to this episode. I know you have a lot of choices when it comes to podcasts, and I appreciate you spending your time with us. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you do, please consider leaving a rating and a review and telling a friend about it. And the support page is live over at ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/badmoviesweLove. I'd also love to hear from you. So if you have a bad movie you love and or would like to be a guest on the show, you can contact me directly at badmoviesweLove@thescheiss.com or badmoviesweLove on Twitter and Instagram. And that's love spelled L-U-V. Until next time, take care, be well, and have fun however you get your movies.